Hello, beautiful. And what I'd like to know is, what's good in your life today? I'm Kia with another episode of the Female Veterans Podcast. Today, I have with me another amazing podcast host. Her podcast, Nubian Queen Nation, is amazing. So if you have not heard it, please run and go check it out. And while you're at it, follow her on Instagram. We'll get into that later. Nubia is a five-year veteran of the Air Force. She served both reserve and active, and she served during Desert Storm, which we have in common. So I want to welcome you to the show, Nubia.
Thank you for having me. Yes, I am Nubia and I reside in New England.
So Nubia, let's jump right into it. What made you join the military?
Well, I actually come from a small Navy town in New England, and I did not want to wear the white bell bottoms that the Navy wears. And I wanted to travel outside of New England, and I wanted to learn a skill. And I chose the Air Force, and that's how I ended up in the Air Force. Actually, it's nothing really deep about it. I do come from a military family, though. My grandfather served in the Coast Guard. My father served in the Army, and my sister and her husband were Army, and I ended up going into the Air Force.
So I feel you on those Navy bell bottoms, although that is one of the things I liked.
Well, they're in style now. It's in style now, right?
Yeah,
right. Going in and out of style, right?
So, and I often talk to female veterans and find that there's a family legacy of both men and women who have served before them, and therefore it was a natural progression almost for them to join.
Well, you know, what's funny is that I didn't even realize that I came from a military family, honestly, until later on, almost halfway through my military experience. I never thought of it that way until I started thinking, wow, my sister, my father, my grandfather. And I'm like, wow, I do come from a military family. And my father, I know my mother really didn't want me to go in. And my father said, you know, it'll just make your application different from another person's application. If you both have equal qualifications and they see that you're in the Air Force, you know, Air Force or military, then that might give you one up on a person as far as applying for a job or whatever you want to do next. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going. And I wanted to travel overseas, and I got to do that.
That's amazing. Yes. So tell me, what was boot camp in the Air Force like for you?
Wow. You know, thinking back now, it's funny because my daughter just also went into the Army National Guard. And she says, wow, if my mother can make it through basic training, I can make it through basic training. I'm like, oh yeah, really? So I wasn't a very athletic person, and I didn't even like practice running for miles, or because the Air Force is different. You just have to do that one annual run and you're good. But going through the obstacle course was kind of a little bit of a challenge. I remember being, you know, I think we all were nervous, you know, and I do remember having this big burly guy behind me, and we're all trying to get through the obstacle course. And I got tired. My legs got so tired. I'm like stopped under this. You have to kind of like move your arms and your legs as you're waddling through mud under this net. And the guy behind me just started moving my feet, because if I didn't go through, the people behind me couldn't get through. So I had some help there, and it was like teamwork. And I'll never forget that. And it's funny to look back on it now. Yeah. So it wasn't that hard. And honestly, I was standing in line too. I didn't even know that one of my cousins was in the chow hall. I looked over and I saw my cousin, and I was like, we couldn't, you know, the military is so strict. You really can't speak. But I was looking at her. I was like, hey, and, you know, so I kind of, nobody else was looking. I ran over and gave her a hug, and, you know, so it was really a memorable experience. I have to say, it was one of those times that you can look back on that experience and smile.
That's amazing. Do you feel like Air Force boot camp would have been easier than any of the other branches? Because I hear that a lot. Like, people went into the Air Force because it was considered the easiest branch.
Well, I absolutely. And my daughter makes fun now because she's Army, and my sister and her husband are Army. And I'm like, wow, you have to run every day. Ooh, that's just, you know, so we do that competitive, funny, fun things, you know, that we do when we're in the military. But you know, you have to, I think the scoring as far as academically might be different, but definitely I'm winning for the fact that I wasn't going to have to be running every day and being, you know, very strenuous physically. You know, they challenged me mentally, definitely. So yeah, I wouldn't have exchanged it or changed it for the world. I enjoyed that part of it.
Did you connect with a lot of what I call my boot camp sisters? Were you able to connect and keep in touch with any of them? It was a different time for us back then. It was harder to keep in touch.
Exactly. You know, I keep telling my daughter, I'm sorry, I keep referring to her because she just came from Poland, and she got to keep in touch with a lot of the people that she met in Poland, and she went to leadership school, just came back. And I wish that I had, we had internet and all those type of things back then, and email, but back then we really didn't have those things. So there's a few, maybe one or two people that I know of that I knew actually from Desert Storm. But other than that, I lost contact with a lot of people,
Me too.
I wish I knew some people that way, but I don't.
I feel that. I'm always looking for the ladies of Company 908 from Naval Training Command at Great Lakes.
At least you remember, actually one time I did have a picture. I remember trying out for basketball. I wasn't really good at it, but I got to travel. And I was also a cheerleader for our local, I was in Spain, in Turkey, but in Spain, there were three or four of five of us girls that were on the cheerleading squad, whatever, on our off time. And we actually connected a few years back. We found each other on Facebook, and that was kind of fun.
The cheerleading squad.
Yeah, it was like a weekend thing. The guys were playing football and we were in Spain and we got to travel with the team as they played. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah, we're going to have to get more into that later. So tell me, what was your first duty station like?
My first base was Turkey. And I have to say, I had a really good experience. The one thing that sticks out the most to me about Turkey, though, was being a female on a small base like that. There's a thing with, what's the acronym, MST, military sexual trauma.
Yeah.
Men just kept asking, I won't say for sexual whatever, and I'm not trying to be explicit, but this one guy said to me, well, I can help you move off. I know you may not want to be in the dormitory. And I thought, me being the young person that I was and being very naive from a small town, I'm like, wow, you'd actually help me to move off? He said, yeah, I would help you with your rent. I'm like, that is awesome. He said, yeah, I would just come by and visit you every so often. I'm like, yeah, no, that is not. So I kept getting propositioned in that way. And then there were a lot of women that were there. I guess I'm telling the secret of Incirlik Air Base. I'm not even sure if it's even open anymore in Turkey. But there were a lot of women who men always wanted to just take you out on dates and whatever, whatever. And so they never cashed their checks. Back then, you didn't necessarily have direct deposit, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm really dating myself. And so there are women that I heard that the accounting office had to come to these women and say, look, you can't keep stacking your checks. You need to deposit these checks.
Oh my goodness.
So, really? So but it was a really, because it was such a small base, it really did feel like home. Everybody that you met there, they were like family to you, Mm-hmm. So from Turkey, I think I left there and I went to Spain, and that was a nice city. I mean, it's like metropolitan, like New York City, And I love the family value of the people off base, how they would eat dinner late at night. So I don't know. I really had a good experience in Spain also. I really can't, complain. I do remember, I think I might have mentioned it earlier, that I did have a supervisor. Sometimes you train the supervisor that comes in, you fill them in, this is how we operate this and that, whatever. And so he was a little bit, I don't know. They still say the phrase of Napoleon syndrome, because he was kind of a short guy, short in stature. So it seemed like he had a lot to prove. And with that gentleman, I felt like I need to call mental health and talk to somebody, because it started to get stressful, because he was just kind of bossy for no reason, just overly exerting his power and his authority. And I remember calling my mother a few times and saying to her, this is a lot of pressure, And she said, well, whatever you do back then, it's like, whatever you do, don't go to mental health, because it will count against your trying to make rank, and it'll count against your records. And nowadays, I think there's a lot more people that go to mental health. They say, okay, this is what my situation is. I'm feeling stressed, whatever. But back in the day, we're saying 20, 30 years ago, people weren't as readily prepared, I think, to go and speak to mental health or to actually, out your superior officer or supervisor,
I think generally in the military, and I think maybe it's a little bit better now, that there is a stigma against going to mental health and being that I had on one episode, my guest said she was told the Army didn't want weak dogs. Right. So it's that kind of thing, you know, and it's and actually, I think that's the name of the episode title. So if you want to listen to that one, it's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's just the stigma associated with being in the service and getting mental health and seeking that kind of treatment is just I think today it still lingers a little bit. I think there's been changes made. But I think a lot of people are still a bit hesitant to use those services.
Definitely. Definitely. There is still a stigma. But I think that the generation that's coming up now, like our kids, I have kids that are in their 20s. Mm-hmm. They're not having it. They will definitely, they'll say out loud, I have a mental issue problem and I need to go speak to somebody. You know what I mean? The millennials and the Gen Z. You know?
I love that for them.
But I actually come from a small town, which is where the Coast Guard Academy is. And I know a few years ago, there was actually some women who finally got up enough courage, because it takes a lot of courage to step out and say, this is happening to me, whether it's, you know, sexual trauma or whether it's a racial tension, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of those things. I think a lot of people are now stepping up more than they were 20, 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because there's a lot more things in place. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot more things in place now to say, okay, you know, that even, you know, I know this is not to do with this is military, but even with going to college now, they have something called Title IX or something where if you're on a college campus and you feel like you're being sexually harassed as a female, you can go to the people in admin and say, look, I need to file a Title IX or something like that because this person is harassing me and I need to feel comfortable on campus, you know? So it just... The world is changing and women should be allowed to just speak up and say what's actually going on with them.
I agree. I think I hear so many different stories on this podcast about military sexual trauma, harassment, stalking, like mm-hmm. all of the things that we have experienced. And, you know, I talk to women going all the way back to the 70s. That has been one of the furthest years back that I've had guests. I'd like to go back even further if mm-hmm. possible and see the experiences that women have had, but it has been evolving. So even though it has gotten a lot better, it is not completely fixed.
Right. Not dissolved. There's still an issue. And, you know, there's always going to be an issue because people come from different backgrounds, different environments. And I'm not saying it's okay for people to harass other people, but, you know, if we just keep speaking up, and being that voice and being the one that stands out is by saying something, I think that slowly the changes are being made.
I agree. I think back in the day, like when I served, when you served, it was a little bit more on certain commands, because I think it's by command too, because I think I certainly experienced harassment, but it didn't have the same effect on me as it might have had on another. Like I dealt with it and I've developed a way to deal with it mm-hmm. to where I actually could sort of laugh it off or get out of the situation. So I've developed strategies, right? But we shouldn't have to. That's
right.
Number one. But right. back then, you didn't want to be what I call, like we call that girl. Like it was more right. difficult to speak up and say, hey, bro, you're sexually harassing me right now. You need to cut it out and like educate them to the right. fact of what, because they really don't know. Because they're right. in this culture where it's been pervasive right. and acceptable mm-hmm. for years, for decades. So they come into this culture and they have like all the boy locker room talk and all of that stuff where these kinds of things are acceptable amongst each other. And then mm-hmm. they bring women in and they have to shift those gears and mm-hmm. try to figure out what's respectable. And lots of guys just get it because they think of their mothers and their daughters and their sisters. There's a vast majority of guys who don't get how to make that shift into being respectful and they don't want to. So
exactly.
And obviously there's good and bad people everywhere. So you get a bunch of bad apples in the military and you, cause it's easy to be respected because you don't have to be respected based on the quality of your character. You get mm-hmm. respected based on what's on your arm or on your collar. Mm-hmm. So you can be a horrible human being, but you're an officer right? Like, so then you can prey upon enlisted females or maybe even other officer females. You know what I mean? So I think back in the day, it was a little bit more difficult, and it may still be in some commands now, more difficult to be that courageous voice to say, right, hey, this is not cool. This is not, I mean, I actually had an experience where I think I've mentioned this on this podcast, and it certainly will be in the book, but about my roommate and how we tried to, she was being sexually harassed, yeah, to the point where she attempted suicide.
Oh my goodness. And, wow.
But before that happened, before, mm-hmm, it got that far, well, mm-hmm, before, I watched her change, mm, from this vibrant, amazing, fun-loving. We did everything together. We worked out together. We were laughing. We were shopping. We were doing everything together. And she changed. She withered. She, mm, like, I watched her diminish and from day to day to day over the course of our first summer as staff. Mm-hmm. And when I finally got her to tell me what was happening to her, me being the person that I am, I don't know if it's from, I'm from West Philly, you know, I'm like, I don't know what it is, but I was just like, oh, hell no, we're going to do something about this. Yeah. We are not taking this. We're going, right, to take it up our chain of command. And I went, she went through hers and I went through mine, and she hit roadblock after roadblock. Like, they minimized her, they marginalized her,
they blamed her.
They blamed her. They made a joke out of her. Mm-hmm. I went through my chain of command at a different clinic, and, mm-hmm, my chain at least listened to me. And, mm-hmm, I begged them to get her out of that clinic. I said, mm-hmm, listen, we don't want to make trouble, but why didn't we? Just that's food for thought right there. We don't want to make trouble, but she's in a bad situation. Is there anything we can do to help her? I went to my senior chief, mm-hmm, and my senior chief said, oh, okay, we're going to look into it and see what we could do. Mm-hmm. No, it was my master chief at that time, correction, before the senior chief. And he did look into it, mm-hmm, and they did nothing. Mm. So I was so outraged. Mm-hmm. That I did. I said to her, and she was done. She was, mm-hmm, done. She was just like, there was no hope. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, we're going to go above our chains, and, mm-hmm, we're going to keep going up our, because that's what you do in the military. If your direct chain is not helping you resolve the issue, you go over them. Now they don't like it. Right. And you'll probably be penalized for it.
Yeah,
but exactly. But you can do it. That is the proper procedure to do. And I was ready to do it. And she said no. And I had to respect her wishes because it was happening to her.
Right,
but I felt so, like, I think that was my first heartbreak of service. Like, mm-hmm, my first realization, like, you know, bad things happen to good people and justice does not always come through.
And something is broken. That's like, mm-hmm, with me, I just recently got reconnected to other women veterans because I'm like, I am not connected at all. You know what, mm-hmm, I mean? And so I start to plug myself into the community because then you hear the chatter and you know how to do this, you know how to do that, you know, mm-hmm, up and coming things that are coming, you know, that are going on. Mm-hmm. And I did hear a story of one lady said that, you know, when you're 18 or 19 years old, most of us go in around that time, you're so impressionable. And maybe a little bit naive, you know what I mean? And so she was saying that one girl was having that kind of situation that you're speaking of. And she went to somebody, her upper person to speak to, was also a female who didn't back her at first.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then a situation, because I guess, you know, it's even also unfair when you are maybe, not me, but you might be voluptuous. You might be, you know. And so just because you look a certain way or you dress a certain way, that still doesn't give anybody permission to speak badly of you or to think that they can touch you or to say or do, mm-hmm, things to you, you know?
Exactly.
And so this one female didn't feel, her upper higher rank female at first didn't feel bad for her because she thought, well, no, you're bringing some of those things upon yourself. And then, mm-hmm, I think eventually the woman said, you know what? Okay, enough is enough. And then she got her back and she started to speak for her on her behalf. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to do. When you see a younger person or a person who, whatever, they, like you said, your girlfriend needed assistance, you were there for her. Mm-hmm. And if you're a female in a higher ranking position, you know, take note and take some of these young people under your arm and make sure that these men, you know, that she probably knew the officer better than that young girl did. And she knew that he had a reputation for doing some of these things. You know what, mm-hmm, I mean? So you just have to take some of these young people under your arm. And if you see something, say something, like they say, right? If you see something, say something. be that person that mentors the younger ones behind us.
I agree. It's so, so necessary. And with young women wanting to go into the military, when they ask my opinion, I always tell them, hey, listen to a few episodes of my podcast. There's good stories, there's bad stories, mm-hmm. and educate yourself on what you need to know. I think the military is fantastic. I think I would not change my experience. Like my experience was amazing for me. When I was in, was I entirely happy? No. But looking back on it, it's one of the best things I ever did. And one of the things that I hold the most pride in. But the fact of the matter doesn't change that we need to be mentoring these young girls trying to go in. We need to be mentoring these young women who are serving right now and experiencing some of the things that they're experiencing and create platforms like this for them to go and speak and seek the guidance and support that they need. So I love that you said that. Yeah.
And you know, the funny thing about it is that I'm not sure if I mentioned earlier already that I have three daughters that are in their 20s. And out of the three, one of them wanted to go in the Air Force, couldn't find an Air Force recruiter. I think we did talk about that. And she finally went into the Army National Guard. And my husband and I really wanted her to go Air Force because that's where we were. Go Air Force.
Yes.
but you know, so she just came back from Poland, and so they're going to do what they're going to do. You know, even if you want your children to go this direction, that you have to let them flex and, you know, find their personality and find their way. So she went to Poland and she served as an EMT, and we're proud of her. She just came back, you know, but when people used to ask me, I'm like, you know, it's a different service from when I was in, but like you said, research it, listen to your podcast, and then figure out which direction you still want to go, because there's tons of benefits, going to school, your VA benefits, buying a house, there's so many different benefits that come with it.
I agree with that. And I think that's kind of what led me on this path to the podcast, was helping people understand what their benefits were and helping them apply and get their benefits for like 20 years, because I didn't know, and I had to figure it out, and I was nearly homeless and I didn't know there was aid for me out there. You know, and
honey, so I'm still trying to figure it out. So that's a different podcast. I might need to have you out here.
Let me know.
When I came back from Saudi Arabia, though, I'm sure there's tons of women. When you come back, sometimes you go through so many things that you actually put it all on the back burner and you act like you're in denial. Mm-hmm. So I never even applied for any kind of benefits to even go to the VA hospital or any of that until like 20 years after I got out, because
not alone.
You know, there's just like you put it behind you, like it never happened. And that kind of hurts you, because then you have to dig back and remember the things that happened so that you can move forward to get the help that you need.
It's so true. If I had a nickel for every time I heard that on this podcast, by the way, of females who don't pursue their benefits, don't know they have them, or don't want them initially because they have distrust in the service and the government and that all of that.
That right there, the mistrust. Because people are like, why didn't you open your mail? Like, why am I going to open up my mail? I really have like this big distrust for, you know, Uncle Sam. You know, they call it Uncle Sam, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a whole, is there a podcast on that?
It is an issue. And that's where a lot of our sisters, I got into all of this because of homeless female veterans on the street. Because ultimately, the goal of this podcast, the goal of everything that I'm doing with it, is to ultimately be able to help female veterans that are on the streets, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of these women are on the streets because they don't trust the government in order to get the services and benefits that are due them. I don't believe that anyone who has served this country should come back home to not having their basic needs met. That's not right.
Right. Exactly. I agree with it. I think that there even should be... Like, I know that I said I joined this, you know, in my state of Connecticut, joined up with other veterans, and you can hear what they did and where they are as far as their compensation, all that kind of stuff. But there needs to be somebody that you can check in with weekly that will sit down with you for free. That's not a lawyer. That's not a whatever. And of course, there's the American Legion, all those things. But there just needs to be a segment or a person who just starts the business of sitting down with other female veterans and walking them through the paperwork. Mm-hmm. Because there's certain clue words. If you don't say the right clue word, then you miss out on a whole bunch of stuff. You know
what
I mean?
It's true. That's exactly what I used to do. Well, with male and female veterans that I would come across, I would teach them how to get their benefits. But it started back in the day when you had to fill everything out by hand, and then it evolved to be online, and it continues to evolve. I've seen the system change several times now, mm-hmm. but it is important to learn and it is important to know, and it can seem overwhelming. And there's been many times that I had to help people feel less overwhelmed and just say, do a little bit today. Cause and on top of that, we're a lot of us are dealing with PTSD mm-hmm. and chronic health issues that sometimes prohibit us from having the ability to feel not so overwhelmed mm-hmm. when we're trying to do all of this. It's and knowing all the keywords and knowing the system and knowing the ins and outs and knowing how to navigate it all can seem really, really overwhelming. And it can deter a lot of vets from even getting what's due them.
And moving forward. And I, you know, I'm a little bit hesitant because, you know, truth is truth. But when you come from, you know, you're happy-go-lucky and you're always trying to be positive, you know, I've had a doctor come say to me, oh, you don't look like you have PTSD. I said, okay, so then I'm walking around with invisible PTSD because you're holding on to your observation, like money's coming out of your pocket. Like, how do you look at somebody and say, you don't have PTSD? And I also had a nurse who worked in a regular hospital, you know, in the trauma section. She says, I have PTSD. You don't have PTSD. I'm like, PTSD looks different on every single person.
True that.
So people are, they're so quick to judge, to come up to you and say, you do this or you don't have this or whatever. So it's just, like you said, most people just walk away from it. And that it's hard to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. That causes PTSD all on its own. The pushing and pursuing and the go after what's rightfully yours. I had a gentleman said, if the military broke you, they need to fix you.
It's facts. The thing is, too, is I don't know if a lot of people know this. I don't know if I've mentioned this on this podcast before, but I fought my disability case. I'm still fighting it. It's been over 20 years since I first almost 30 now, since I first filed and got denied. And then I gave up for a period of years. See, that's what they do. And then I learned, I met a veteran who helped me see how we help each other. And he said, you can't give up. You have to keep,
they want you to give up.
You know, it's deny until you die. Like you can't.
Oh my gosh. I never heard that before.
Right? Like you can't give up. So that's the thing. So I fought this case. And back when I started, nobody even knew what fibromyalgia was. The VA was not willing to give me a rating for that. But it has all these symptoms, all of the sub-symptoms that I have for my invisible illnesses, which also makes it worse, right? Because it's invisible illnesses because people can't see them. And because I'm a genuinely positive, happy-go-lucky person, people don't assume I could be depressed. People don't assume that I might have anxiety. People don't assume that I have PTSD, you know, but because you can't see it. So if I have heard that a lot. I have heard it's all in your head so many times. Gosh.
And you know, I'm not gonna get out the car all jacked up without my little bit of makeup on, because we can put some paint on our face and make us look like we're all.
You know, I do it all the time.
I'm not limping in, and I'm not that person. You know what I mean? Right. Plus, I feel like God's looking at me. And what's mine is mine. It's going to come eventually. Right. If God wants it, God willing, you know, that's how I feel, you know. But yeah, there's definitely, it's a system that is getting better, like you said, but it could be a whole lot smoother. It could be a whole lot smoother.
And it's taking a long time. It's taking way longer. Like veterans are dying in droves. The World War II veterans are essentially gone now. Mm-hmm. The Vietnam veterans are dying off. Mm-hmm. Like these people deserve better.
Right.
I mean, look how they fought for the PACT Act. Why did they have to fight that hard to get that approved? Mm-hmm. Like, that's disgusting.
And, you know, what I'm finding, too, just from hanging out with other female veterans is that because they have a thing in some states called Take a Vet Fishing. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of that. So there's different organizations in whatever state, and they'll, like, adopt the veterans, and they'll take, and you get to go fishing, which is fun. And then after that, they have meal prepared for you, and people serve you. And it was a really good, fun event for a day, you know. And so sitting in those circles and talking to other women, I'm like, all these women were at a certain percentage. I'm sorry, I was going to go there. A certain percentage of compensation. And I said, well, how many of you are considered a combat veteran or Desert Storm like me? They're like, none of them. And you know what? If I go to an appointment right now, I can't even get compensated for my gas. So I know that there's something wrong with that program. There's something wrong with that program. But again, when the mail comes and it says, you know, I have an appointment, I barely even open my mail from if it says veteran, blah, 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 blah. But like you said, I need to just keep pressing forward, you know. And my husband's also a veteran. And now he, with the help of some people, he's at a certain percentage. So he can get compensated for his gas. And if he takes me, then, but it shouldn't be that way. I have more benefits as a dependent wife of a veteran than I do as a veteran myself.
That's a shame. Foul. That is absolutely foul. There is no reason, as I am a combat veteran from Desert Storm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
By the way. But I came in at the end. They were already withdrawing the troops, so I didn't even have to deploy overseas, right?
Oh, I was over there in Desert Storm under that diamond on the map. You look under the neutral zone, and I was right under the neutral zone. You know, the day that the, you know, I told you about Turkey, I told you about Spain, got out. We got a joint spouse to Tampa, Florida, with my husband and I. And then I got out in Tampa. He stayed in. He retired full, you know, full benefits. Mm-hmm. And I got called from off of active duty. Because you know how when you get out, you have a little bit of that. You have to serve a couple of weekends. You know what I mean?
You have the reserve time.
So they called me. I was in reserve status. And they called me to go to Desert Storm. And so here I am. Mm-hmm. And my whole church, everybody... First, you know, I got the news. Everybody starts praying like, oh, you know. Well, my husband was active duty. And here I am now a reservist after doing my 4 years of active duty time. And because I was attached to a medical unit in Tampa, I got called to go. And my husband was attached to, you know, he worked on jets in, and it was a training facility there at that time. And so he didn't have to go. So everybody's like, he's active duty. He's staying in Tampa. But I had to pack up and I went, girl. I have to tell you, I took that. We had no children at that time. I took that pregnancy test like 5 times before I got on the plane. But it wasn't meant for me to go because, you know. But off I went to Desert Storm. Yeah, wow. And that's one of my books that I finally, you know how you write down. Everybody says, "Oh, write down your notes." And here it is, so many years later. I think that I have a niece that's 31, so it's been like 31 years. That's how I keep track. And I got a chance to be a part of an anthology, and so I actually got to write one chapter. So it was a devotional book. And I'm like, this is actually a good chance for me to start gathering all my notes and remembering some of the things, the bits and pieces. So I do have my chapter in a book of like 28 other authors, female authors. So I was able to, I was on the military, well, told about my military experience. Everybody else told about other things, you know. It was called Purpose in My Pain.
Oh, that's amazing.
No. Well, my first book chapter that I was in was The Purpose in My Pain. The other one is called, I'm forgetting, I'm Stronger Than My Storm. So when the title came up, Stronger Than My Storm, I'm like, oh, I think I need to jump on this because it reminded me of Desert Storm. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I wrote was, my experience over at Desert Storm.
Anyhow. That's amazing. I mean, I definitely am going to put the links to both of those books so we can go read your chapters in my show notes. That is the description box below where you read where this episode is about. If you scroll down, you will see lots of information in there for the listener, ways to follow, ways to, you know, contribute, not-for-profits that I support, but you will also find links to incredible things from my guests like you. Mm-hmm. And we should all go and check that out. When I mentioned the book earlier, I actually am putting out my very first, The Female Veterans Podcast Presents, a book anthology. And it's a story of female veterans stories. So yes, it's interesting that you mentioned that because this is something I'm working on right now and I hope it will come out next year. But I want to hear more about Desert Storm from your active duty experience. Oh, what was that like for you going over there? Like, what was it like when you first got there? What was the feeling going through your body?
Well, you know, first it was all excitement. You're serving your country, a little bit anxiety because you don't know what's going to happen. You know, we had a really big group that came from Tampa. And because it's funny because I'm from Connecticut. So I'm used to sometimes being, I'm just going to say again, being the only minority, you know.
Right.
And so all of us that went over, I think a lot of them got clumped together. And here I am by myself with a group of maybe, I don't even remember now, 23 people, 25, 30 people. And it was, everything was all hunky-dory in the beginning, you know. But not until the longer you were there in country, as we would say, for some reason, I was the one that they would say, okay, you're the radio operator. We're going to send you off to this new group. And then another time, okay, a new group of people came in. We're going to break you off and send you off to this new group. But everybody else was staying together, you know, and I kept kind of getting like, I don't know, leased out. And that doesn't sound appropriate. But so that kept happening. And I do remember one of the first times I went to go, they had different tent cities for, you know, Air Force and Army. And you think that all of us, because we're in Saudi on whatever base that was, I don't remember, that we all just would go into one commissary in the home or makeshift commissaries and BX that they had there, right? No, but they had separate BX and commissary for Army and a separate BX and commissary for the Air Force. And I remember standing, like our line for the Air Force went through quickly, you know, but while I was going in, you see all these, this long line for people for the Army. And we're kind of like chatting across our lines. And I'm like, well, what are you guys standing in line for? Some of them were just standing in line for a pack of cigarettes. And I think I was going in for like a Snickers bar or something. I didn't really need that much, you know. And I just whizzed right into the store and came out. And they're still standing in line. I'm like, why are we separated like this? And I know that there's different budgets, I'm sure, for Air Force. And there's different budgets for Army now that I look back on it. But that was just craziness, you know, knowing that. Because I was in the Air Force, I could just go in and get a Snickers bar or whatever I needed. And everybody else had to stand in line for hours, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing I remember is, of course, now, like my daughter, like somebody went to Poland, they had their phones, cell phones. There was no cell phones back then. Mm-mm. So I remember my husband, like maybe once a week, would send me a text, like not a text. What was it? He would like type out a message and then they would print it out on paper and give me the message. It came like through fax, like a fax type of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would get a fax. And I kept some of those, but it's funny because the paper that they used, the ink erased.
Oh, no.
It's like going into the store now. If you hold on to a receipt from the store, that paper eventually that it was printed on it, you know, your receipt, they erase. But so I remember that. And, you know, I think that towards the end, I can remember taking a shower. And I'm not sure if anybody out there in podcast land remembers the show MASH.
I remember it.
MASH, right? The guy, they had to go outside and the latrine was in a wooden, they built it with wood. Mm-hmm. And so we had something like that for a makeshift shower when I was way out in the desert. And the water would heat from the sun. They would fill it up, you know, at a certain time the night before, it would heat by the sun. And so by the time you get in there, it's your turn to take the shower, you pull the string, you lather up, you pull the string, and you would rinse off. So because I was with a new group of people, I had been, you know, in country for, I don't know, 2-3 months, you know, mm-hmm. and the new people had just landed pretty much. So you have a bunch of, you know, women, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes that wash their hair every day and they used up all the water. So by the time I got off shift and I went in there and I'm lathered up, you know, I had my facial mask on, you know, I pulled that string. I got a drop of water. And I said, Lord Jesus, help me. Help me, Lord, help me.
Oh, no.
It was no water, you know? And so I was like, so I had to like put my uniform and stuff back on, walk back to my tent, because at that time we were living in tents, and get some wipes, baby wipes. And just, that's how I most of the time had to take my, you know, cleanup was taking the baby wipes and wiping down.
God.
So This you know, this is bringing back memories and it's making me kind of emotional because, you know, because like I said, you come back and you're in denial. So I think I pushed back a lot of those feelings, that the things that happened to me, because I don't want to remember. And there was sometimes of eating chow hall, my relief would forget to come and relieve me. And so I always had Snicker bars in my pocket. And it was, you know, some people go through way worse things, but I do remember the wind, the sand blowing a lot. And so when I one time did get to go to chow hall, my oatmeal or whatever I was eating had a lot of sand in it because the sand was blowing, you know, through the thing here. But I mean, thank God I wasn't getting bullied. I didn't have anything like that, but I was really, really missing my husband and I couldn't have any children at that time and my parents. So I do remember trying to write home frequently so that they would know what I was going through while I was over there, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then after all of that, I can remember packing up and it's time to come home. And, well, the night before the Scud missile flew over. I remember being there when Whitney Houston sang, and she was in Tampa. How could Whitney Houston, of all people, come to Tampa for the Super Bowl game? Uh-huh. And I was in Saudi Arabia, you know? And so I
remember. So unfair.
You know?
Yeah.
So I remember we watched it delayed. We got it, and I think we watched, you know, watched it afterwards. So that was kind of fun. A lot of us got together in a room and we watched the Super Bowl after the fact. But there was a, yeah, there was, so I was going to say that we, it was time for us to pack up and go home after all the things that we had been through. And I said, okay, here we go. We're going home. And the plane landed. We packed everything up. And the flight attendants were so happy. Thank you for your service. It was like a double decker, some kind of plane that was double decker, double. And they said, well, you know, thank you for your service. You can sit anywhere you like, blah, 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 blah. And I can remember that I had a female commander and she's like, no, you can't sit with us. You go sit in the other section. I'm like, after all that we've been through, and this lady was still being nasty and telling me that I couldn't sit with them, that I had to sit in a separate section where it didn't matter by rank because everybody could sit wherever they wanted to. But she told me that I was not allowed to sit with my same group of people that I flew over with, and I had to sit in a separate section. And I have to tell you, at that moment, it felt like, it's like when you're a good Christian and you get to the pearly gates and you think that you've lived a good life because you want the Lord to say, you've done well, my good and faithful servants, right?
Mm-hmm.
It felt like getting to the pearly gates and being denied access. That's what it felt like at that very moment. I remember that thought. And I wrote that in my chapter. So I was so happy to get home. And after that, I think I had a little bit of time left in my unit, but I said, you know what? I'm finished. I'm through. Please give me my paperwork. I'm done. Because I served my country and this is how they, that's how I was treated, you know?
Yeah.
So a lot of silent, you know, racism.
Microaggressions.
Microaggression. I didn't even, my daughters have taught me that word. I didn't even know that that was even a thing. You know, I think what I was going to say was the Scud missile was flying over. I met a group of nice gentlemen who were from a different unit. I don't even know what state they were from. I don't remember anybody's names, but I remember hanging out with them that night and then we were playing cards or something like that. And they said, I had a top secret clearance, but they said, something's going to happen tonight. We can't say what, but sleep with your uniform on. Sleep with your helmet on and don't take off your boots. And I was like, he said, and don't tell anybody else because we're letting you to be, you know, be allowed to be privy to this information. And so I went back to my tent that night and I'm laying there still with my helmet and everything on. And sure enough, the Scud missile, the alarms were going off. People were running crazy. And I ran to my bunker. That's what I was going to tell you. I ran to my bunker. We all prepared that bunker together. We all took sandbags and filled it up and built it up in case that would happen, you know, that day would happen. I ran to my bunker, which is what we were assigned, and they told me there was no room for me. They told me there was no room for me. And I was like, what? I'm like, I helped you all build this bunker. And they didn't know that a white female lieutenant, I'm just going to say what it is, the white female lieutenant was behind me. And so I'm like, well, if there's no room for me, then there's no room for her, you know? And so we had to turn around in the dark and run and find another bunker that was empty. And another group of people let us in. And she was so outdone. By this point, I knew the people that I was dealing with, you know what I mean? My unit from Tampa. And she was like, I can't believe that just happened. I feel like I'm back in this, you know, civil rights time and, you know, Martin Luther King is marching. And I was just like, girl, live in my skin. She just was so outdone. She couldn't believe that happened. Now, if she had been standing in front of me, would we have gotten in? I will never know. We will never know. But because
I was little heart, bless her little heart. She couldn't believe it.
She couldn't believe it. She could not believe it. And I was like, it is what it is. You don't live in my skin. So when people are under pressure, that's when the real self comes out. They show you their true colors, you know, because the whole time over there coming from Tampa to Saudi, they're like, oh, we're all family. We're going to stick together. And I could not wait for that plane to land when we got back to Tampa. I never saw those people ever again because it was just a whole lot of ugliness, you know? And then the last thing I'll say to you is, and I'm sorry, I really wish I could say it was all a bed of roses, but you know, they assign a buddy to you, you know, how when you're at basic training. So you get on the bus and we were getting ready to go somewhere to do something. I don't remember what it was. And I said, okay, everybody stay near your buddy. And they said, well, let's stop and check our meal on the way to wherever we're going. And then when you get back on the bus, you do a head count to make sure everybody's on the bus. So we all got off, we went to the post office, got our mail, and then we got back, you know. So I stopped to do something, and next thing you know, the bus took off and it left me. I'm like, how does the bus leave you in the middle of the wherever? And I'm like, did they do the head count? And how do you miss the only Black person on the bus? Can somebody tell me how do you miss the only Black person on the bus? So I tell you, when you don't think you have people, of course, God had my back, but I was ready to come home. I was ready to come home because it was just, that was a scary thing to know that. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a lot of the stuff that I had that was in my chapter. And of course, there's a lot of stuff that you leave out because I only had like 5 pages.
So one of the things I always say when I talk about this podcast is mm-hmm. I don't know anyone who has not at least witnessed, if not experienced, racism, sexism, homophobia, bullying, harassment, or military sexual trauma. Mm-hmm. That's why there are good and bad stories of service in the military. And that is why I do this podcast, to share them all, to bring awareness. Mm-hmm. And so when I hear your story, and I think about the time frame of when you were serving, not that it's that much different now, but like the time frame that you were serving, it's very pronounced that we didn't have the term microaggressions, like you pointed out back mm-hmm. then. Mm-hmm. But it seems to me a lot of racism and a lot of microaggressions. And what's frightening, though, is that it's in a time of war and it's a matter of life or death. And so essentially, they're telling you that your life is not worth as much and you're not welcome to save your life, you know? And mm-hmm. that's a deep trauma. Like, I think I can understand why you were so ready to get home. And mm-hmm. I think anyone could understand why, you know, that it was done for you and why you wanted to put it all behind you. Mm-hmm. And so many women feel this for various different reasons of why. When they get out of the military, they don't often even tell people they were in the military. Right, they just compartmentalize it and put it behind them. So what was your transition like coming out?
Well, I know that there were some, took some leave because they give you leave, you know, and I think I had a little bit of downtime. I'm sure that they do a lot better at transitioning people out of, you know, a trauma. That's trauma. I mean, like, mm-hmm. it was a war situation, you know? So I pretty much jumped back into work and living life, everything like that. I think I didn't have any children at that time, mm-hmm. but I think I did leave. I was working for the sheriff's department at that time. And I think I left there to work at my church, you know, thinking that was going to be a lot more peaceful, whatever. I have to say that Tampa Bay, they did acknowledge us, the service people who came back, and they had like a parade for us, and I got a little plaque. So that was nice. Maybe it's because I worked for Hillsborough County. So that was nice. But other than that, like I said, I was pretty much in denial. And then I thought I was ready to have children. And unfortunately, I had 2 miscarriages, which the military mm-hmm. tried to say, had nothing to do with the trauma that I had just experienced.
Wow.
So that was another thing. But like I said, that, and I had a bad condition with my feet, and that's still going, persists till this day, 30 years later. And like I said, all this stuff is invisible because, you know, but I'm going to keep fighting it.
You cannot give up.
Yeah. So like I said, I met some people that were nice that you like to keep, you know, keep in touch with. I don't think there's anybody that I know of from, maybe 1 or 2 people from Desert Storm that I met that I have to, I'm still in contact with, you know, by Instagram or whatever, Facebook. But of course, can you imagine if Facebook and Instagram was, if it was available back then, you probably would have still some good connections, but mm-hmm. a lot of us lost track of everybody, of each other.
I am fortunate, thanks to Facebook, really. I'm not on there often, but I do have connections from people that I served with, and even some of the civilian friends I made, because I was stationed stateside, just uh-huh. north of Chicago, the entirety of my wow. 5 years active. Uh-huh. And so I was able to go and make a lot of friends in the city. And I'm friends with, you know, I kept in touch with a handful of them mm-hmm. to this day, which is fortunate, but my boot camp sisters are lost to me. Because of course that was before like the dot-com era. That was, I was actually getting out of the military right when the dot-com era was sort of growing and building and becoming mm-hmm. a thing. Mm-hmm. So, it was different then. I think email was the hotness and maybe the first cell phones. Like it was just, I went through the pager era. Yeah. And then early cell phones might have just been starting to come out back then.
I think that there was a picture taken of me. I tried to join the basketball team, I think, when I was in Turkey, only so I could travel to. So I think from Turkey, I got to travel maybe to Spain. That's probably why I chose Spain as my next base. And they actually put me in the game, and I threw the ball into the wrong hoop. So I was benched, but that was a good, but I got to go to Spain for that temporary basketball game. But I think when I was playing, there was a football team on base in Spain at that time, which was Torrejón Air Base. And I was a cheerleader. Like, why not? Like, you know, So somebody snapped a picture of me and maybe three or four other girls, and that picture surfaced on Facebook. We found each other. So we don't communicate, but I am friends with them on Facebook. So that was kind of cool to make that connection, you know.
That's cool. We didn't have anything like that. I don't remember that. I mean, I remember the guys used to go to the drill hall and play basketball, but I don't recall us having a team. I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely have fond memories of that base and some of the experiences I had. When people ask me, did I get to go anywhere? And I say no. It is bittersweet because on one hand, I didn't get to see the world. I didn't get to go do any cool stuff overseas like a lot of people do. But I did have a pretty good experience in Chicago. And I lived in Chicago for 12 years afterwards. So I really loved it.
So now I understand why when you ask your podcasters to tell you about a little bit about their experience, because I did get to go to Turkey and the food was awesome. Ekmek. Mm-hmm. I love the bread, ekmek. And then Spain paella was my favorite. They had a really huge
rice dish. It was so good with the seafood.
Yeah. Ooh, yes. I love that. And I got to take a little bit of a short vacation to Greece. And that's where I had the thing that I liked the most was their, what's it called? Baklava. Well, I can remember when I came back and I was at work one day and a lady, a young girl she was from Turkey. And she said, oh, would you like to try this baklava? I'm sure you've never had it before. And I said, oh, I have had it before. I've had it in Greece. And she said, no, you didn't. I'm like, yeah, I did. And I realized that Turkey and Greece have had an ongoing rivalry for years. And so she was telling me, you didn't have this in Greece. I'm like, yes, I did. the thing that's interesting is that people, to me, not to offend anybody, but the Turkish people and the Greece, they look a lot. They look a lot alike to me, you know. Mm. But in the food, a lot of the foods were the same. Mm-hmm. But they probably had different names for them.
Yeah.
But
it's interesting because it's a regional sort of thing. So they probably have a lot of the same types of foods where they created their dishes. I don't know. I haven't been to Turkey yet, but it's on my list. And so is Greece. So I'm going to try all of those things. So thank you for sharing that with me, girl. I'm a foodie, low key. So thank you.
And go to the spa. I went to the spa in Turkey and I had a really good experience. I loved the spa in Turkey.
Well, now
the taxi cab drivers probably haven't changed. They were oh my gosh, that's like take a taxi ride on your own, you know.
Take your life into your own hands. Yes. Okay, well, I'll keep that in mind too. So I have just one more question for you, because I want to be respectful of your time, but I'm having such a nice conversation. I almost don't want it to end. But I need to ask you, what advice do you have for your veteran sisters coming up behind you?
I would say document everything. Like, I don't care what, even keep a journal. Keep a journal because you never know when you have to go back to your notes for any reason. And, you know, make the best of your time there. And I know I pointed out some of the, you know, things that happened to me, but there was a lot of good time. There was a lot of good people. Just enjoy the atmosphere. Don't stay on base. I know a lot of people back then, never left the base of Incirlik, Turkey. Mm-hmm. And they never left the base in Madrid to go downtown in Madrid. So whatever base you're at, go off base, enjoy the people, enjoy the food, the culture, jump right in. And now document it on YouTube. But if nothing else, keep a journal. And when you get out, don't be in denial. Jump right into those veteran benefits and stay connected and get plugged in. That's what I would say.
That is great advice. And some advice that I always give is, you know, one thing that I used to tell veterans that I would come across that were having mental health struggles would mm-hmm. be to find ways to get connected to other veterans mm-hmm. and help get in your veteran community and do yes. something positive in that community. And that is often life-changing and yes. helpful and can help you heal. So I love that advice. And thank you so much for sharing it.
Yes. Yes. And plug into other women veteran, because when you're around other women veteran, you don't have to explain yourself. They get you. They get you. Like you and I just meeting, it seems like I've known you like
for a long time, right?
So we get each other, and there's certain things that you don't have to explain because there's a certain camaraderie there. So thank you so much for taking this time. I totally appreciate you.
Oh, and, I love this.
And I hope that, you know, that it, whatever I said was to some benefit to somebody.
It will be. We never know when our story is someone else's survival guide. I read that quote and it hit me so hard that in the truth in it. And that is what I tell female veterans when they tell me, why do you think that my story would be good for your podcast? Because mm-hmm. all stories are good for the podcast because they all matter. Every mm-hmm. single one of our stories matter because we matter, because mm-hmm. we did something that the majority of women in this world don't do.
Right.
But we did
it. Takes a lot of courage to leave your comfort zone of home and friends and family and hop on a plane and go to basic training and, you know, all those things. So kudos to all of us. And thank you for your service, right. too.
That's right. Thank you all for your service as much as thank you for listening to this podcast and coming on this journey with me. It has been a wild ride. I am in my third year of doing this show, y'all, through bad health situations, family drama, trying to just keep everything going, but I'm still going. I'm still here for you, with you, sharing your stories for you. And making sure the world knows we're out here.
So, even through computer glitches, right?
We just keep going. So the message of today is persist, persist, persist until you win, right? Yes. And that's what it is. So Nubia, I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the Female Veterans Podcast. Tell me one more time the titles of your books and where we can find them.
Okay. The first book that I have is The Purpose in My Pain. And well, the link will be below as far as they could purchase yes. the book to me directly. Mm-hmm. And then the one with my Desert Storm story in it is I'm Stronger Than the Storm. I'm awesome. Stronger Than the Storm. And I am a Nubian Queen 2020 on Instagram. I have a YouTube page called Nubian Queen 04. And again, all the things that you need to contact me will be in the notes below. And I have an aunt that I love her saying, she says, if at first you don't succeed, suck until you get the seed. I'm sorry.
Okay, I was not expecting
that. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We're veterans, okay? Should nothing shock us anymore.
I
love that. Thank you so much for sharing, and thank your aunt for me. That was a gift for me today.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
Thank you. And with that, we're going to wrap it up. So like I said, thank you so much for coming on this journey with me. I love you guys. Check out the links below in the show notes. Don't forget, I am on Twitter at FemVetPodcast, but I'm most active on Instagram at the Female Veterans Podcast. And keep supporting the show. Keep giving me those 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. It really helps for them. You know how the algorithms work, right? So I need those for them to push the show so that it reaches more people, so that it can help more people. So thank you. And thank you for supporting me. I love you guys. And I'll talk to you next time.